Welcome to the 180 Podcast. You are listening to a teaching of the 180, a new church committed to learning to love Jesus and love like Jesus. Our prayer is that God would use this teaching to help you grow closer to Him and that you would feel moved to join us in person, where you can grow in community with the larger 180 family.
Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion de l'Église 180. Vous écoutez un enseignement de l'Église 180, une nouvelle Église qui s'est engagée à apprendre à aimer Jésus et à aimer comme Jésus. Notre prière est que Dieu utilisera cet enseignement afin de vous aider à vous rapprocher de Lui et que cela vous donne envie de vous joindre à nous en personne où vous pourrez vous épanouir au sein de la communauté qu'est la grande famille de l'Église 180.
So we've been in a series, if you've been with us the last few weeks, we've been in a series called Becoming. Becoming. And it's really, this is a topic that you can't really get away from when you look at the stories of Jesus. And it's a story, it's a topic about discipleship. It's about becoming certain kinds of people, and that wherever we find Jesus, wherever He is, whatever He does, He always has this way of somehow inviting people to follow Him. Regardless of, you know, where they come from or what they've done or, you know, what culture they have or, you know, what they believe. Just Jesus has this way of just meeting people wherever they are and inviting them to follow Him. And as we follow Jesus, we become a certain kind of people. We become a certain kind of people. And one of the questions, you know, I want to explore with you this morning is, what's the end goal of discipleship? What's really the final product? Like, you're here today and you're thinking, you know, I'm not sure about this whole Jesus thing. I'm not sure if I want to follow Jesus. I still have a lot of questions. And you're maybe thinking, you know, what's really the end goal? What's the payoff? What's the final kind of result? Like, when you get to the end of your life and you say, you know, man, I followed Jesus all of my life and I became this. And, you know, as we're going to discover, it may not be what you think it is. And this is something that we've seen throughout the series. For example, a lot of times we think, you know, discipleship will make us behave better, right? So better behavior, right? There you go, better behavior. And, you know, there is a little bit of truth to that. You know, as you follow Jesus, you become, you know, more loving and more forgiving and more kind and more generous. So there is some truth to that. But, you know, in reality, when you look at Jesus, He doesn't really go around saying, you know, follow me and you'll be a better person. And we all know the problem with that way of thinking. I think we should know the problem. It's that it's very possible to change your behavior to be very moral and virtuous and yet be filled with fear, with pride, with a desire for power, with unresolved anger and bitterness. And so, you know, one of the things that we talk about here is something called emotionally healthy spirituality. And so you've probably seen a picture like this before. If you've been here before, you could go to the slide. And it's a picture of an iceberg. And emotionally healthy spirituality is basically this idea that it's really about discipleship. That you cannot be spiritually mature while remaining emotionally immature. And so in this picture, what you see above the, you know, above the surface is that that's all the external behavior, right? That's the thing that everybody sees. That's the thing that, you know, everybody, you know, you could change. And people do change this, and it's good. You should. I mean, you can. But a lot of times we confuse discipleship with changing external behavior. Like, I just got to start doing this and this and this, and I have to stop doing this and this and this. And again, there is a truth to that. But one of the dangers in believing that that's all there is to it is that we start making those changes, and then we look at our lives and we say, oh, I'm doing good. I'm succeeding as a disciple. And that whole process could actually blind us from the deeper issues, from the deeper things that are going on. And by the way, you know, if you've heard of the Pharisees, this is kind of the problem that Jesus has with the Pharisees. Go look, I mean, I'm not going to tell you any stories, but you could go look in the stories of Jesus as He encounters the Pharisees. Matthew 23, He says, you know, you're so beautiful on the outside, but on the inside, you're dead bones. Jesus says stuff like that to the religious leaders, right? He's like, you guys, you go to church on time, you pray, you do all your prayers, you do your fasting, you do your tithing, you do this and you do that, and yet you've missed the point of what it means to be a follower of God. You've missed the weightier matters of the law. Mercy and caring for the oppressed, and there's things going on beneath the surface. And you know, this is a problem that actually happens most of all in churches, where we think that discipleship is really just change those external behaviors. And what ends up happening is the longer you believe this, the longer you believe, the harder it is to see what's going on beneath the surface. So that's the first thing, better behavior. The second thing we mistake discipleship for is discipleship is the same as believing in Jesus. Discipleship is the same as believing in Jesus. Or God, right? And we've talked about this a little bit throughout the series. And, you know, growing up in church, for me, I grew up in church. Some of you know that I grew up in church. I was a pastor's kid. And one of the most important questions, you kind of picked this up along the way. There's one question, and it's the most important question of all. And if you answer this question correctly, you're in. If you don't answer this question correctly, you're out. And if you learn to ask people this question, you know, you're up here. If you don't ask this question, well, you need to learn to ask this question to your friends. And this is the question. You can put it up. Are you saved? You've heard this question? Are you saved? Are you saved? Are you saved? And no, there's nothing wrong with that question. But what happens is this oftentimes becomes the most important thing. And one of the problems, of course, with this question is that Jesus never actually asks this question. Jesus doesn't go around asking people if they're saved at all. Now, I know what people mean by this. What people mean by this is, you know, do you believe in Jesus, right? Or do you believe in God? And did you, you know, accept him into your heart? So Jesus never actually asks this question. And another problem with this way of thinking is that we start to divide, maybe you've experienced this, you start to divide people into saved and unsaved, right? So who's in, who's out? And when that becomes the most important thing, now you're back at square one, the first problem, which is behavior modification, right? What do I have to do to be in? Am I doing good enough? Did I do enough? And you feel like you're constantly being assessed. Am I in? Am I out? Am I enough? So Jesus never really goes around and says, do you want to accept me into your heart? He never really asks this question. What he asks is he asks people to follow him. And you know, this idea of salvation, are you saved? It's not a bad idea. I mean, it's in the Bible. And you can go ahead, Google's your friend with this stuff, you know. Go and search all the times salvation or the word saved appears in the Bible. You might be surprised. Because oftentimes, the Bible doesn't speak of this idea of salvation as this one moment, but it speaks of salvation as this lifelong process. That not only were we saved, but we are continually being saved. And so salvation in the Bible isn't so much about, you know, believing in God and going to heaven, but it's about becoming a certain kind of person. So that's number two. Discipleship is more than just believing in God. The third thing that we often mistake discipleship for is that, you know, if I follow Jesus, I will live a life of comfort. I will live a life of comfort. It will be pain-free. It will be problem-free, right? So you have number one, which is good behavior. You have number two, which is belief in God, whichever order, right? And we talked about this last week. Dom talked about this. And then as a result of that, you have your good job. You have a good family, and your life will go smooth. Now, you've probably experienced, if you have had any experience of church or even just watching TV on some channels, that there's different variations of this. There's different ways of talking about this. But basically, it looks like this. If you do A, B, and C, then God owes you, right? He's going to give you X, Y, and Z, right? You do this, right? You pray this prayer, read this verse, give this money, make this declaration, say these things, get on your knees. All these things that you do, and God will owe you. God will give you something in return. Now, this is not Christianity. This is not discipleship. This is not following Jesus. This is actually much closer to magic. Okay? It's magic. You're doing special things to get a special outcome. And maybe you've seen different kinds of language. You know, some of the language that you hear from this is you know, I'm a son of a king. You hear that? I'm a son or daughter of a king, and you are. But what they mean by that is, therefore, you know, he's going to make me rich. He's going to give me promotions. He's going to, you know, make my life comfortable and smooth. He's going to make, you know, and he might do that. But the kingship of Jesus is a kingship that ends up on the cross. I mean, the disciples died. They were persecuted and were killed. And so somehow they missed that part of discipleship. So whenever Jesus becomes a magician, that is not discipleship. Whenever you see people trying to weave formulas together, right? If you do this, you do this, you're going to get this. That's not Jesus. That's not Jesus. So Jesus didn't say, follow me so that you can be saved and go to heaven. He didn't say, follow me so that you can be a better person, or follow me and you'll live a life of comfort without pain or problems. What we've been finding in the series is that Jesus says, follow me and you'll learn a new kind of life. Discipleship is about learning. You're going to learn about a new kind of joy. You're going to learn about a new kind of hope. You're going to learn about a new way to live, a new kind of freedom. But in order to get there, it's going to cost something that feels like dying. It's going to feel like death. That's why the subtitle of the series is Some Things Must Die Before You Can Live. And so this is the question I want to explore with you this morning is, you know, what's the end goal of following Jesus? What kind of people do we ultimately become? And I think there's different ways to answer this, but there's this ongoing theme that you find in the Gospels and the rest of the New Testament. And, you know, once I tell you what it is, once you read, you'll start seeing it everywhere. So I want to look at a story, and it's really a famous story. It's a story that is famous. We love telling this story to kids. And kids love this story. We don't really know what to do with this kind of story. But it's the story about when Jesus walks on water. Okay? It's the story when Jesus walks on water. And there's different versions of the story. But the story that I want to look at is in Matthew. And it's a story where not only Jesus walks on water, but Peter does too. And, you know, a lot of times when we hear the story, we have a lot of questions like, is that really possible? I mean, is that scientifically possible? Can we really walk on water? Have you tried to walk on water? I've tried. It doesn't work. And really, I mean, sometimes, and when we tell our kids the story, we're like, Jesus has superpowers. And, you know, I guess he has superpowers, but that's not really the point of the story. There's a bigger picture. In fact, the real miracle of the story isn't so much that Jesus walks on water, but it's that Peter does too. I mean, that's incredible. And this really changes everything. And so this story isn't so much about, you know, about superpowers. It's a story about, it's a story that really kind of gives us a picture of the kind of places that Jesus takes us when we follow him. It gives us a kind of a picture of the kind of places, the kind of people that Jesus helps us become. Okay? So, it starts in Matthew 14, and you could follow along on the screen. It's going to say this. It says this. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. So Jesus sends his disciples into the boat. He goes up to pray. So he separates himself from them, right? So they're alone. He goes up. Now, whenever this happens in the Gospels, where Jesus tells his disciples to like get in the boat and cross the lake, it's telling us that he's about to do something or say something that is going to help his disciples cross to a new level of trust, to a new level of understanding, to a new learning experience. So what it means is Jesus is about to teach them something new. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think about learning or teaching, The picture that comes to mind is this, a classroom, right? When I think of teaching or when I think of learning, this is what I think. I think of, you know, getting at a desk and having your notes and all that stuff. And, you know, sometimes Jesus teaches his disciples this way and the crowds this way, right? He preaches sermons and he tells stories. But if you watch Jesus, it's really interesting because he walks with these disciples for years and years. His primary way of teaching is by using real life experiences to teach them about what really matters. And the point here is that, you know, what we're reminded of here is that there's certain kinds of learning that Jesus wants us to learn that we can never learn in a classroom. We can never learn it in a classroom. And I'll be honest, I love the classroom, you know. I love learning new ideas. I love, like, learning new concepts and just getting more information and just thinking. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a good thing to think. You should think. You should learn that way. But I think one of the reasons why I love the classroom is I like having the quick answer, right? Give me that quick kind of answer, the book or the manual or the sermon that's just going to be like, wow, that's so interesting. Right? Wow, that's such a cool idea. And I'm like, give me the answers. And so this is what we do with the Bible. You ever play Bible roulette? You know Bible roulette? You know Bible roulette. Come on, we all do this. I've done this. We're like, okay, Jesus, I'm ready to learn. I'm ready to learn. So random. There we go. And he shall be circumcised. Okay, Jesus, you messed up on that one. Let's try that again. Let's try it again, okay? Let's do this again. Oh, yeah, I have a word from the Lord right here. Okay, do not murder. What the heck is that? What is happening? Now, you could keep doing this, and eventually it'll probably work, right? You just keep doing random things and treating the Bible this way. And, listen, there are exceptions to this. God could speak to you this way. It's very possible. There are stories of this. But Jesus is like, listen, I'm not going to give you the easy answer. There's certain things you need to learn, not through just a quick classroom-type setting. The only way you're going to learn this lesson is if you learn to get into the boat. Learn to get into the boat. And guess who's on the boat? All the other disciples. It's just them. Jesus is not there. It's just them. The boat is the place where the disciples have to learn to work together. Isn't it fascinating? And Jesus doesn't come. You know why? Because discipleship never happens alone. We've talked about this in the series, discipleship. It's very rare that Jesus has a one-on-one thing with somebody. And if it is, it's only to incorporate them into the community. Discipleship never happens alone. Listen, you can read the Bible by yourself every day, and you should. And you can listen to sermons online. I mean, that's very easy to do today. You just stay home, listen to sermons, and it's perfectly fine. You should do that in some sense. But there are certain lessons that you'll never learn until we get into the boat. There's certain lessons you can never learn just from a book, just from a classroom, just from a sermon, just from a teaching, just from an idea. There's certain lessons you need to be with other disciples. It's amazing. It's amazing. Some of you are experiencing this. Some of you are experiencing this right now because, you know, you're just starting to get to know people here at the 180, or maybe you joined a home group, or maybe you're hosting a home group, or you're facilitating a home group, and you're like, I never thought in a million years that I would be leading a home group. And or maybe you're volunteering somewhere, you're helping with kids, and you're doing something, and it's like confusing at times, and it's scary at times, and you're learning things about yourself, about God, about others that you could just never learn in a book. It's amazing, isn't it? Some of you are experiencing that. And so what is your boat? What is the boat Jesus is asking you to get in on? Let's keep going. It says, meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land for a trouble. Disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them walking on the water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost." Okay, so, you know, Jesus sends them out. They're in the boat. There's a storm. Heavy waves. And then at 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus decides, "I'm going to walk on water," towards the disciples. And they're freaking out, and they think they see a ghost. Now, just in case you didn't know, this is not a story about ghosts. This isn't a story about whether ghosts are real or whether or not. That's not what the story is about. This is a story about discipleship, about following Jesus. And what we learn is that Jesus always, always, always has a way of leading his disciples into situations where they have to get honest about what they fear. We all, if we follow Jesus long enough, Jesus will always take you to a place where you have to get real about your fear. We have to. That's where Jesus takes us. And so if I were to ask you this morning, what is your deepest fear? What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? I think statistically, some of you will know. Some of you will think you know. And some of you will have no idea. And some of you might even say, "Well, am I allowed to be afraid? I thought it was a sin to be afraid. I'm not supposed to be afraid. Or some of you, like some of you men, might feel like, "I'm not afraid. I'm right." Is there a place in culture for men to be honest about their fears? And you know, as I was thinking about this, as I was thinking about fear, you know, there's different kinds of fear, right? There's kind of like fear of a physical threat, right? Like a tornado is coming, or a storm, or you're afraid of spiders. Or, you know, you're afraid of this is probably a bigger situation, where, like a situation in your marriage, your marriage is going to fall apart. Like you're afraid. Or maybe you're afraid that something will happen to you or to your kids. But then there's another kind of fear that we experience, and it's a kind of fear that really has this way of controlling our lives, and it has to do with who I am. Who am I? Who do people say that I am? It sounds like this. It sounds like, what will they say if that thing happens to me, or if that thing happens to my kid? What will they say about us? What will people think about us when that happens? What if they reject me? What if I'm not enough? Or what if I'm a disappointment? What if I'm not good enough? This is the kind of fear that has this incredible power on our lives, and it's the fear of man. It's the fear of others. It's the fear of what people will say about us. Now, a lot of people say that one of the most common fears of all is the fear of, does anybody know? Public speaking. So we're gonna just try this. So statistically, many of you are very afraid of public speaking. So we're gonna do this. I'm gonna cut it short, and we're gonna close the door. We'll lock it, and everybody here, you're going to come up and one at a time, and you're all going to share something for 2 minutes. And it has to be for 2 minutes. How are you feeling right now? How's your body? What's your body doing? Your throat closing up a little bit? Heart's beating a little faster? Getting a little design this area? Right here? Right? Okay, you can relax. We're not going to do that. That was just a test. But this is true, right? A lot of people fear public speaking, but if you think about it, I mean, what do you really fear? I mean, there's something behind that fear, right? It's the fear of like, well, what if I say something stupid? What if I fail? Or what if they laugh at me? Or how will they perceive me? How will they look at me? This is the kind of fear that controls our lives. And this is the kind of fear that really keeps us from getting into the boat. So what are you afraid of? And maybe you don't know the answer, but maybe you'll only know the answer once you get in the boat. See, Jesus has this way of inviting us into the very place where we have to get honest about our fears. And we'll see why. Okay, let's keep reading. Verse 27 says, "But Jesus spoke to them at once. 'Don't be afraid,' he said. 'Take courage, I am here.'" Take courage, I am here. He's saying, listen, I'm the one who's going to help you in your fears. I am the one, that's what he's saying, I am the one who can set you free from living in fear. And it causes us to have to ask this question is, what do you do when you're afraid? How do you handle fear? How do you deal with the fear? A lot of us want to deny it, but I mean, how do we deal with fear? And I felt like as I was thinking about this, you know, I have to talk about a specific fear that's so prevalent in our culture today. And it's fostered and fueled by a culture of comparison and competition. Comparison and competition. Listen, it's not enough, you know, to have a nice car. I need to have the better car. Right? It's not enough to have a nice house. I just have to have the nicest house on the block. It's not enough to have a good job. I need to have the best job. It's not enough to be rich. I need to be the richest guy in the room. It's not enough to be pretty. I need to be the prettiest. I mean, not me. I'm pretty. This is the culture we live in. This is the culture we live in. And listen, it used to be, you just compare yourself to your neighbors, right? And that's why the saying, you know the saying? Keeping up with the Joneses? Nobody knows that, okay. Keeping up with the Joneses, it's a real saying, okay? I'm not making it up. Keeping up with the Joneses, right? You just keep up with your neighbor. Now today, with social media, you have thousands of neighbors. So you're constantly comparing, and it's not just for kids, I mean, it's adults too. Just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and comparing and comparing and comparing and competing and competing. If that's not discipleship, I don't know what is. Yeah, right? Why don't I have that? Or why am I not there? Or why am I not doing that? And this is an epidemic. A lot of people, especially the next generation, is developing an identity based on comparing themselves to others. I'm not pretty enough, I'm not rich enough, I'm not famous enough, I'm not liked enough, I'm not enough. And social media, I mean, they love this. I mean, that's what they're built on, because if you could compare yourself to someone else, most likely they could get you to buy whatever it is that they want you to buy. And it's just this cycle of fear and comparison and fear and comparison, right? I'm not enough, I need to get more, or I need more, or I need to be more. And now listen, I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I mean, this is normal. This is human. We all do this. We all have moments where we compare. We look at ourselves and we look at others. It happens all the time. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to eventually get off this stage and I'll be like, was that enough? Or did they like it? Was it good enough? Did they like me? Should I quit? Should I get off the boat? Should I quit? Get a job somewhere else? Is it enough? This happens. I mean, don't feel bad that this will happen. It will happen. You're going to have these moments where you're like, hey, who am I? Just don't live there. Don't remain there. And I think we all know people, and maybe you can see it in yourself, that just live there. They're there all the time, comparing, comparing, comparing. And they live in such a way where they're just waiting to be upset, offended, right? They're always just, always never okay. I just be okay. It's a cycle. Like, it's not enough. I'm not enough. And the longer you stay in this mode of living, the harder it is to get out of this. It's really hard to get out if you've been doing this for years and years and years, constantly assessing yourself based on what others are doing or seeing or saying or whatever. It's so hard. And one of the things that happens, and you know, I was thinking about using this illustration, and I thought, okay, well, let's do it. Yeah, did anybody here hear about the Super Bowl selfie kid? Anybody? Yes, okay, the kids did. Yeah, all of you need to get the internet. Okay, it like the internet exploded this week because, okay, I'll give you some context. the Super Bowl selfie kid. I didn't want to pick on him, but I will a little bit. Okay. So at the Super Bowl, at the halftime show, the halftime show was performed by JT. And so JT is singing. JT? No? Justin Timberlake. Okay. I'm not a big fan or anything. So the halftime show is, you know, Justin Timberlake, and he's going, and he's singing, he's doing his performance, and he goes up in the crowd. He's going up in the crowd, and he ends up next to this kid, right? And there's these pictures. He ends up next to this kid, and this kid is trying so hard to get that perfect selfie, right? He's trying so hard. And then, and this is what happens. You go look at the picture. There he is. You see it? This picture went viral, this and many other pictures, right? First of all, look at everybody right now. Everybody is living their lives through a device. Like, what if aliens from Mars came down to study the human race? What would they say about us? Because I'm curious, because look, everybody, everybody is looking through, because it doesn't matter to experience something cool, it matters that other people know about it, right? You can't just be there. And you know, you're so Super Bowl selfie kid, sweet kid, good kid. Why can't he just be there? Because his phone stopped working. Poor kid, right? His phone stopped working. He's not going to be able to tell his friends. Of course, he became famous because of this picture, right? His phone stopped working, right? The moment doesn't matter unless other people know about it. And this is affecting everyone, that whenever we experience something extraordinary, not that that was extraordinary, but it's got to be lived with a screen. And this is fueled by this fear that I'm not enough. I need to prove, I need to show, I need to impress, I need to be more. And Jesus says, when you follow me, I'm going to set you free from this kind of fear. And you know, what I think Jesus does is helps us become, when we do this, he helps us become more present in the moment. Present to people, present to experiences. We don't have to, I mean, there's nothing wrong with social media. I'm not saying there's anything wrong. I have it too. But Jesus helps us to reorder our priorities. Let's keep going the story. I love the next part. It says this. Then Peter called to him, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." "Yes, come," Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. "Save me, Lord," he shouted. Okay. So Peter has this moment where fear doesn't control his life anymore. Peter has this moment where he's totally set free. He has this confidence, not in himself, but he has this confidence to say, "Tell me to come to you, and it's going to happen. It's going to work." And he gets it for a moment. He gets this powerful moment, and he experiences something amazing and supernatural. And then he begins to sink. It says this. It says, when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. When he saw, what are you looking at? What are you paying attention to? What are you seeing in yourself, in your life, around yourself, around others? You know, a lot of people today believe that the answer to the problem of competition and comparison is just solved with a little bit more self-confidence, right? Self-esteem. Right? So the solution is this. Instead of seeing yourself in a negative way, just see yourself in a positive way. Learn to do this. Now, I'll just tell you right now, one of the problems with that is that a lot of seemingly self-confident, high self-esteem people are still constantly comparing themselves. They're still addicted to comparison. They can't stop. Right? It doesn't solve the problem. We're still comparing. You're either comparing up or you're comparing down, right? And it's fear. It's driven by fear. And when we live in this mode of fear, We're constantly, constantly looking at ourselves and looking at others and looking at ourselves and looking at others and looking at ourselves. And we go back, we fall back into this habit, like, oh, the problems I have and the flaws I have, and I'm not good enough, and I'm not enough, I'm not liked enough, not pretty enough, I'm not this enough. And we start to sink. You need something outside of yourself. You need something outside of you to give you a kind of confidence to step out into the water. A new way of seeing, a new way of seeing the world, a new way of seeing yourself. You know who models this really well in the Bible? A guy named Paul. We looked at the story of 1 Corinthians and so last week, and so if you were with us, I wanted to go back to this story and look at Paul and what he says. And you could go to the next slide. This is some of the problems. This is the slide that we showed last week. And the Corinthian church was going through quite a few problems. Obviously, it was planted by this guy named Paul. And so Paul plants this church. And you know what's great about this story, really, is that we start to see this culture of competition and comparison happening in the church. And so here's some of the issues that you could see. And so it was planted by Paul, but and Paul left eventually. And so there were other Christian leaders who would come into the church and help and mentor people. And so what ends up happening over time is that people start identifying with a certain leader, right? They're like, well, you know, I was mentored by Paul. You were only mentored by Apollos. I need to be in charge. And so there's all these divisions happening. So you see in chapter 3, if you want to read it at home, you can. There's this division happening, and people are arguing, and they choose their leader, and they're like, this is my leader, and I'm more important than you and your leader. And so there's all this competition and comparison, and it's tearing up the church apart. And Paul, we talked about this last week, Paul addresses some of the problems by saying, you know, imitate me. And he says, I'm going to send you Timothy. He's going to help you through these issues. And now I want to look at a specific example that he says that he wants them to imitate. And this is what it says. It's mind-blowing. He says this, as for me, it matters very little how I might be evaluated by you or by any human authority. Do we not have a slide for that? No slide for that? I don't even trust my own judgment on this point. My conscience is clear, but that doesn't prove I'm right. It is the Lord himself who will examine me and decide. Oh, there it is. Okay. So this is what he says. As for me, it matters very little how I might be evaluated by you or by any human authority. Okay, let's stop right there. A lot of people love this first sentence, right? And what he's saying is, I don't care what you say about me, and I don't care what anybody says about me. That's what he says. So a lot of you guys are like, yes! Amen. I don't care what anybody says about me. I only care about what I say about me. Right? This is the self-esteem thing, right? And this is a real thing in our culture. This is what we say. And there's books on this. There's tons of books on this that hit the New York Times bestseller. There's some books that are built on this idea that how to live in such a way that you don't care about anybody's opinion of you. Those are the books that are selling right now. But Paul goes even further. He says, not only do I not care about what you say about me or what anybody says about me, I don't care what I say about me. This is mind-blowing. This is crazy. He says, I have a very low opinion of your opinion of me, and I also have a very low opinion of my opinion of me. He doesn't fall for the trap of fixing low self-esteem with high self-esteem. He says, listen, I have a sense of confidence and identity. It doesn't come from you, and it doesn't come from me. It comes from someone else. Paul has been a disciple for a long time, and he gives us this picture that when you follow Jesus, this is where he takes you. This is where he takes you. I don't have to be afraid about what other people say. I don't have to be afraid of what I say, because what I say is nonsense. He says, my conscience might be clear, but it doesn't mean anything. It's not enough to have a clear conscience. This fear of what others say, this fear of what even I say, it no longer has a power over you. You could be free from this, constantly thinking about yourself, judging, assessing, comparing. You could be set free. So Peter has this moment in the story where he does get afraid. And this is what happens. This is what happens. It says, Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. "You of little faith," Jesus said, "why did you doubt me?" Now, a lot of times, you know, we read stories like this or verses like this, and we think, all we can think of is shame. Shame, shame, shame. Shame on you, Peter. Shame on you. But think about it. Why would Jesus want that? Why would Jesus want to shame Peter? Peter, you should have walked on the water better. It's kind of silly, right? It's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying this. He's saying, listen, I am going to take you into places where you're going to learn to trust me. That's discipleship. I'm going to take you into places where you're going to learn to trust me more and more and more every single time. And when you learn to trust me, Peter, you will experience a deeper and more beautiful freedom to do incredible things. Incredible things. You know, at the end of the story, the disciples who are in the boat witness this, and they're amazed, right? And they start worshiping God, and they're so amazed. And, you know, they're really, Peter doesn't get the center of attention. He's not really the one who's like, they're not really amazed with Peter. I mean, Peter was only able to do what he did because he was focusing on Jesus. And here's the big idea I want to suggest to you, that there's people in your boat who need you to step out in courage so that they can be encouraged. There's people in your boat that need you to step out in courage. This life, and this is what people need. People need to know that there's a possibility for living a life not being tangled by comparison and competition and fear, but there's a freedom, there's a hope, there's a joy. It comes from a deeper trust in Jesus. C.S. Lewis, a Christian author, he's no longer alive, but you know, he talks about humility. He talks about a lot of things, but you know, he says that if you ever meet a truly humble person, like a really humble, not fake humble, like a truly humble person, it's very interesting what he says. He says, you never walk away from them thinking about how humble they are, right? When you meet a humble person, you don't walk away thinking, wow, that person is really humble. You never do that. That never happens, because truly humble people don't go around talking bad about themselves. Sometimes people think that. That's what humility is, right? Because, I mean, the person who's constantly speaking bad about themselves, they're still looking at themselves, they're still comparing, right? He said, this is what he says, it's fantastic. He says, when you encounter a truly humble person, all you will remember is how much he seemed totally interested in you. It's amazing. And some of you may have heard this quote, and this is a classic quote from C.S. Lewis, and it'll be up on the screen. It says, humility is not thinking more of yourself or thinking less of yourself. A lot of people confuse this, right? It means thinking less of myself. But it's thinking of yourself less. We live in a culture that's just more and more. I have to think more about myself. I have to think more about myself. I have to think more about myself. Driven by fear. But this is where Jesus takes us. Jesus takes us to places where we don't need to constantly be thinking about ourselves. And this is really hard to do. I'm like, this is hard. Just try to do it for an hour. It's really hard. It's really hard. It's close to impossible. I would say it's probably close to like walking on water. It's hard. It's impossible. But these are the walk on water moments that Jesus kind of brings us more and more to as we follow him. We begin to be the kinds of people who we start just forgetting ourselves. And we start focusing on the right things, on the things that matter. And it's freedom. And it makes a difference to everybody on the boat. It makes a difference. You know, Christians for centuries have called this way of life with different terms, with different ways, you know, different phrases in the Bible. I mean, there's different words for this. Holiness is one of them. You know, one of the phrases that I really love that a lot of Christians through the centuries have called this kind of way of life, he said, is holy indifference. Holy indifference. I love this because it doesn't mean that you don't care about anything or anybody. That's not what it is. It's not what it is. It means that you're not constantly assessing, judging, comparing, competing. It means that the words, the actions, and the lives of others don't, like, constantly bother you. You're free. They don't. You ever meet someone like this? You ever meet someone? I mean, they're amazing to be around because really what they are, they're just unoffendable. You can't offend them. They're just okay. They're just content. I'm not saying that they're never angry. I mean, there's righteous anger, right? You want to get upset about injustice or evil and that kind of thing. But this sense that, like, man, they're just unoffendable. You can't offend them. I mean, I love being around these people. They're interested in me. I mean, what would happen if we became these kinds of people? What would happen to our communities and to our city? And I mean, what kind of impact would this have on our kids, on our youth? I mean, just try this week. Just try this. Every time you get offended, just write it down. Write it down. It's hard. I mean, it's really hard to do. Write it down, and then just maybe you could pray through that and just say, God, what are you teaching me in this? What am I afraid of? Am I afraid of something? What am I afraid of? What do you fear? A lot of times, the things that offend us say more about us than they do about the person that's offending us. I don't know about you, but this is what I want. This is what I want for my life. This is what I want. This is what I want for my son and my future kids. This is what I want for our youth. And it's not self-esteem. It's not self-esteem. It's something, it gives you confidence, but it's not self-esteem. It's something more. It's not self-confidence. It's another kind of confidence. And it impacts communities. It impacts families. It impacts generations. This is discipleship. This is the end goal. This is where Jesus helps us go and become. Get into the boat. Get into the boat. Step into the water and learn to trust me, and you could live a life without fear. And this is what ends up happening. The next slide, it says this. It says, when you are set free from the fear of others, you will be set free to love others. When you are set free from the fear of others, you will be set free from the love to love others. I'm going to invite you to stand, and we'll pray, and we'll close. God, you are the God who sets people free, and you love to do that. And a lot of times we could be so burdened and overwhelmed with things that we need to do, or confusion, or different kinds of threats in our lives. Help us to make time for you this week so that we can be honest about our fears. Help us to identify the boats in our lives that you're inviting us to step into. Maybe the relationships that we need to start. Help us to have the courage to trust you and to allow you to take us to new places where we can live lives of fear and not comparison and competition. We thank you, God, for everything that you're doing in us and through us, and we trust you because you're a good God, you're a good Father. In Jesus' name, amen.